The member for Castries East, Castries Central, I asked her to show me the record of what she was speaking of, and she fell into the trap and she showed it to me. Now, Mr. Speaker, when you get up in this honorable house and then you make statements, Mr. Speaker, you must be sure of what you're saying, because there are people, the member Price said I was the advisor. I have no problems. Mr. Speaker, listen to what the member for Castries Central says. She says that this government has put $0 for sink for loan repayment and sinking fund contribution.
I need to get my documents so I can follow what you say. Thank you very much.
Come back. No problem, Mr. Speaker. Page, note the page there. Page 293 on the estimate. Just make a note of that. Make a note of it. 293 on the estimates of 2005. That's what you gave me. And then on the same estimate, on the same estimate, what you gave me on 272, page 272. Okay? All right, good. Now, the second estimate for this year, which is estimates 2004-2006, on page 257, the member is mentioning, is saying that the government has put no money for loan repayments and sinking funds. Mr. Speaker, very simple. Very simple, Mr. Speaker. The member, I'm sure she made a mistake. Mr. Speaker, estimates revised and approved. Now, the estimates say the actual revised and approved. What happened, Mr. Speaker, is for 2004-2005, the estimates were revised. The figures that were projected were revised. But in the year 2005 and 2006, there were no revision of the figures. So that is why it shows not. That doesn't mean that no money was put aside for sinking fund and debt repayment figures. Because if you look at the same estimates, you will see 2005-2006, you will see loan repayment of 47 million and 24 million. That's on page 257. And if you look at the actual, which was paid in 2003 and 2004, on page 257, you will see loan repayments 20 million and loan repayments 14 million. Page 257. All right? So, there's... It didn't change. So that is why it shows zero. That doesn't mean that there was no money paid. It wasn't changed. It was not revised. That's the problem. There was no need to change it. But what was actually paid, which is on page 227, is 20 million and 14 million. So the whole premise of the argument is wrong. Anyway, let's move on.
Mr. Speaker, why is it that in the estimates of 2004-2005 that we have figures for the actual, the estimates, the revised and the actual?
Because they were revised, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, because the figures were revised, but there's no need to revise them in the review.
So that we will see in the next year what the actual figures
if are. If they are revised.
Okay. Very well then, Mr. Speaker.
If they're not revised, then Mr. Speaker
indicated that I would wish the Prime Minister to clarify, and it has been clarified. So I'm pleased with that. We will wait until next year to see. Well, the Prime Minister is waiting.
No, you see, Mr. Speaker, that is not the first time the member of the Castries East makes that point. Oh, Mr. Speaker, the one about Prime Minister. Mr. Speaker, I'm perfectly happy. But the point, Mr. Speaker, the member must know the fundamental manner in which you become Prime Minister is you must win a seat. That is how you become Prime Minister. You must win a seat. And on her record, when she had the support of this Labour Party
member for Castries, please make your contribution.
Mr. Speaker, I just an aside, Mr. Speaker, because no one can win alone. still, I do not intend to deal with what the member of Senator Kashmir says, because it has no logic. It is like what her former chairman said yesterday, flashing mirrors. Remember, Senator Kashmir, Mr. Speaker, speaks about the government destroyed the bananas. The government of the Senusha Labour Party destroyed bananas. The government of the Senusha Labour Party destroyed bananas in Dominica. They destroyed bananas in St. Vincent. They destroyed bananas in Grenada. They destroyed bananas in Jamaica. The government of this Senusha Labour Party destroyed bananas all over the region. The government of the Senusha Labour Party, they caused the European community to change the trading rules. They caused the WTO to change the preferential treatment. The government of the National Labour Party caused them to have the better agriculture, the gap. The government solution caused all that. This is what the member for General Kashmir says. Mr. Speaker, the member for General Kashmir speaks about borrowing. But never, not in one part of the presentation, did the member say, how will government finance its expenditure? There has been not one mention, Mr. Speaker, of how will you raise the money to build the schools, to build the roads, to build the prisons, to cause the development of the people of St. Lucia, both socially and economically. There has not been one suggestion, not absolutely no suggestions on how you will cause that to happen. Mr. Speaker, the budget is simple. This year, the government of St. Lucia had a surplus of on current account of $63 million. A surplus on current account. That means that what the government spent in its daily running, in paying wages, in paying salaries, in running the hospital, there is an excess on the revenue of $66 million. Are we saying, Mr. Speaker, that the government must reduce that current expenditure? The people who speak about debt must tell the people of St. Lucia how they intend to raise the money for social and economic development. You must tell the civil servants whether you lay them off. You must tell the teachers and the policemen that you speak about whether you will not allow them to have their benefits, to pay their allowances. You will say whether you reduce the civil service. You must tell the school children of this country whether you will stop them from getting school supplies at school. You must say that. You must tell the people how you intend to raise the money needed for the running of the country of St. Lucia. Basic. Because, Mr. Speaker, it is simple. The government meets its current expenditure. But the government must borrow for capital expenditure. It's very simple. But the test, Mr. Speaker, the test is whether the government can repay the debt when they borrow the money. It's the litmus test in borrowing, whether you can pay it. And if you look at the figures, Mr. Speaker, you will see that the government has met all its debt obligations. The government even has a sinking fund. That's an interest-bearing sinking fund to put money aside for the repayment of debt. But in the meantime, we must build the schools. In the meantime, we must build the roads. In the meantime, Mr. Speaker, we must build the police stations that the member speaks about. We have to build it. But Mr. Speaker, that is simple. Because in another place, another time, somebody associated with the opposition said they were building no more police stations, nothing more for policemen. That's what somebody in another place said, Mr. Speaker. So that means the member for Central Kashmir and that other person are completely different at loggerheads. And look, simple. But Mr. Speaker, that will not fool the people of St. Lucia. Borrowing. The Prime Minister said that because of the impact of the World Cup, he will borrow $55 million to improve the infrastructure of the country, to fix the roads, to fix the airports, to fix the ports, so that the country would be able to get the benefits of the World Cup. And after, and he also said, Mr. Speaker, he also said that that means that there will be adjustments next year. That is in the better speech. But he will do it now, Mr. Speaker. He will do it now because when the World Cup is over, the roads will remain, the airports will remain, the ports will remain. These things do not go with the World Cup. Simple logic. But he did say, Mr. Speaker, that we'll have to make adjustments next year.
Interesting.
Mr. Speaker, you're speaking about a government that is overborrowing. The government of St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker, could renegotiate on the regional stock market, the RSG. They could renegotiate their debt at a lower rate of interest because of the confidence that the international community has in the government of St. Lucia. People do not renegotiate debt if there's no confidence. And that is why there is an excess of money in the system for two reasons: the buoyancy of the economy and the fact that government consolidated the debt and renegotiated at a lower interest rate. Perfect financial management is perfect. Simple and perfect. Simple, Mr. Speaker. Elementary. Mr. Speaker, basic items in the supermarket. I have made it, Mr. Speaker, abundantly clear that the government imports flour, sugar, and rice. The price of these items has not increased for the last 10 to 12 years, even though there are increases in the price of these commodities worldwide. But you know what, Mr. Speaker? They want to take it away from the government. And these are the questions that you must put on the streets. They answer, will you remove the importation of flour, rice, and sugar from the government and send it to the private sector? That's the answer. Follow me, Mr. Speaker. The government of St. Lucia, to ensure that the price of basic foodstuffs remains, at a particular level, and it doesn't suffer from any movement in markup, the government of St. Lucia has controlled the markup on foodstuffs, on things like baby food, on biscuits, on the basic foodstuffs. There is a control markup. So when the price of these items go up, it's not the fault of the government, it's the fault of external factors. That is called imported inflation. Because we have controlled the markup. So do not blame the government if the price of imported food goes up. You can't blame the government. The price of fuel has never been higher. The cost of transportation, of carrying this item to St. Lucia by air or by freight, has never been higher. Are we going to blame the government for the price of fuel? You're going to blame the government. You speak about 1995. In 1995, the price a barrel of oil was about $28 or $29. Now it is $53. You blame the government for that? Do you blame the government or the Solution Party for that? Mr. Speaker, so much was said that I think that we have my portfolios are too important for me to deal with these trivialities, Mr. Speaker. They are not grounded in any economic logic. They're not grounded in any financial logic. They're not grounded in any tangible, just flashing mirrors. Say it. But the facts, Mr. Speaker, and that is what the people of Solution will want to hear. These are the facts, Mr. Speaker, the facts. Tell us how you will stop borrowing. Three questions. How you will stop borrowing, how you will cause the price of fuel to go down, and how you will finance the expenditure of the government. When you answer that, it's all over. Simple. Three simple questions. Solutions. Not just saying things, according to a friend of mine, saying things. Solutions, Mr. Speaker, solutions. Mr. Speaker, the budget of the Honorable Prime Minister for this financial year, Mr. Speaker, is a budget of reality. It's a budget, Mr. Speaker, that speaks to standards. It's a budget, Mr. Speaker, that you can verify the expansion economic activity in the country. Mr. Speaker, deposits in banks in this country have never been higher. $2.9 million worth of deposits in the banking system in St. Lucia. The net imputed reserves with the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. These are how you measure economic variables and economic growth. $351.5 million, an increase of 24.4%. In the private sector, commercial and the private sector, $810 million of loans. Confidence. The banks will not borrow money if they haven't got any confidence that the money will lend money if they are not sure that the money is going to be repaid. And Mr. Speaker, I have brought here with me the financial statements of two commercial banks, not prepared by the government. Two commercial banks. Mr. Speaker, I can make a document in the House. Financial statements for the Bank of Nova, the Scotia Bank, 2004 financial statement, Mr. Speaker. And here's what the statement says. It says, Mr. Speaker, total current operating earnings, net profit before tax in the current year, $24,543,000. Net profit in the prior year, $16 million. An increase from $16 million to $24 million between 2003 and 2004 from the banks of the country, the banks, indicators of economic activity, not our figures from Scotia Bank. Mr. Speaker, another set of figures from the Royal Bank of Canada, the St. Lucia branch, can make a document to the House. Profit 2004, $34,813. Net profit after taxes, Mr. Speaker. Net profit before taxes, $4,244,000. That's a Lucia branch only. Net profit after taxes, $2.4 million. Both of these statements plus the Bank of St. Lucia, $16 million worth of profit. Indicators, Mr. Speaker, of economic activity. The money in the banks shows that the banks are making profit because the economy of St. Lucia is improving as stated in the budget of the Prime Minister. Mr. Speaker, the member from Miku spoke about regulation. Is the member taking us back to the old days of regulation? How can this government control business mergers? What we have done, and that's going to happen next year. We are going to enact a law on competition, a law on competition policy. So that means that you're going to have a certain criteria so that the customer and the consumer cannot be unduly affected. Laws against competition, Mr. Speaker. But this government cannot change business mergers. This government cannot control the strategic alliances between firms. We are entering the era of the Caribbean single market and economy, Mr. Speaker. So that means that there will be more mergers. There will be more strategic alliances. That is the way of the world. This government cannot hold back. Cannot hold back the clock. St. Lucia is a small country. How can we hold back the clock? We're living in days of vertical integration. Vertical integration where firms get involved at different levels of the production cycle. We cannot stop that. How can we stop that, Mr. Speaker? But Mr. Speaker, I will give you an example because I've been criticized relentlessly for the Rockamel situation, the Hyatt Hotel. Last year, I read to honorable members the contribution of the Sanders Grand Hotel to St. Lucia. This year, I'm going to do it again. Payroll and related expenses, $15,769,000 that this hotel paid in the economy, paid to employees, St. Lucia employees, most of them St. Lucia employees, 700 St. Lucia employees, who paid $15 million worth of wages. And I'm going further, Mr. Speaker. Local food, beverage, and agricultural purchases, $5.3 million. Tolls, pay that and payment to taxi drivers, $3 million. Utilities, $5 million. Airport transfers, $1.9 million. HAT, $3.9 million. Local contract and rental and licenses, $2.5 million. Local entertainment, $232,000. For the year, Mr. Speaker, $40 million circulated in this economy because of the Rockamel Hotel.
In one year,
$40 million. And compare that to the $12.75 million US dollars that was invested in the hotel. And tell me who has benefited from that investment.
Plus 700 jobs.
$40 million spent in the economy can be verified, Mr. Speaker, because of that hotel. But Mr. Speaker, they will continue, and they will continue. Mr. Speaker, there's talk about employment, unemployment, unemployment, unemployment. Mr. Speaker, we agree and we concur that unemployment is an issue. We agree. No sensible member or no sensible politician will not agree that unemployment is an issue. We agree. But Mr. Speaker, you cannot look at it in isolation. Let me tell you what has caused the unemployment in this country to rise to the limits that it is now, which is about possibly 16-17%. I'm not sure. Don't hold me to task on that. Mr. Speaker, during the days of the banana cultivation, there is something that economists call surplus labor. Economics 101, surplus labor. That is labor that you employ, that was employed in the banana fields. These people worked in the banana fields and had disposable income. With the demise of the banana industry, that labor, what Arthur Lewis calls the surplus labor, that labor was unemployed because they were employed in bananas. Now, as there came the demise of bananas, that labor had, there was no choice, Mr. Speaker. These people had to be unemployed because there were no bananas for them to work in. So that labor force has to be retrained. It has to get ready for the services industry, or it has to be made ready for the new agricultural industry. And hence the reason why there's the agriculture development agency that the government is speaking about. You have to retrain that labor. You have to create that labor out of the agricultural mode and put it into services and put it into a modified type of agriculture, because bananas will never be where it was before. And the opposition must be honest. They must be honest and tell the government, the people of St. Lucia, that bananas will never be how it was before. It will never be. There is no messiah who will bring back bananas. Bananas cannot be. It cannot be what it was before. But Mr. Speaker, St. Lucia will not remain as a viable economic entity without bananas, without agriculture. And it's the same people who attacked the government when the government spends $40 million to pay the debt of the agricultural, of the banana farmers. The same people who attacked the government. It's the same people who say the government spends too much money on agriculture. What are we doing in agriculture, Mr. Speaker? The Minister of Agriculture will tell you, What we do in agriculture is we're trying to reorganize the agriculture sector by keeping bananas through tissue culture, through irrigation, through different changes, and at the same time causing agricultural production for the productive sectors, which is food, which are food for the hotels and food for people to consume. Simple policy, very simple, Mr. Speaker. And that process, I'm sure the minister will tell you about. But Mr. Speaker, what does this budget say? This budget says that in this year, the government, because it's a mix of social and economic policy, in the social policy, the government, from 1997, this government has given 7,256 bursaries to the children of poor people in St. Lucia. Before 1997, Mr. Speaker, only 700 poor people in this country got books from the government of St. Lucia. 700. That is going back 1996, going way back. Between 1997 and now, 7,256 children have got bursaries. And now we are going further. We are having a book rental scheme where we will cover 30 or 35% of the children in forms 1 to 3. And the minister was clear when he said the bursaries for the children who now have bursaries, these will continue. So the primary school children continue getting the bursaries, and the secondary school children continue getting the bursaries. Those who are in form 3, 4, and 5. What is wrong in that policy? Where is the fault, Mr. Speaker, in that policy? But we're not only giving them books, we're giving them school places. Because we have the theme of the government, the mission of the government is universal secondary school education by a particular time. And that is why we are building the schools in Rosalie and in Marico, Mr. Speaker, to make that dream a reality. What is wrong with that policy? What is wrong? What is wrong with that policy, Mr. Speaker? What is wrong with the policy? So you tell me, you do not borrow to build these schools because the opposition will tell you that there's a ratio of 69%? So what do? You leave the children out of school. You must borrow. You must borrow, Mr. Speaker, right now in St. Lucia. There has never been such a development of roads in this country. And the minister will speak about it. Again, how do you get the roads built? You will not build the highway from Schwarzel, from Soufre to Vifor. You will not repair the East Coast Road. You will not seal the West Coast Highway. You will not build the roads in Denry North. Because you don't want to borrow? Tell us, Mr. Speaker, tell us, where will you get the money from? Where will you get the money to do these developmental projects? Simple question. But still for that, the allocation, I said the budget is a fantastic social mix of social and economic policy. We are increasing pensioners. We are increasing the allowances given to poor people. We are increasing the allowances given to the people, the elderly people living in the homes. We are increasing all these allowances in the sector. But at the same time, whilst we are doing that, we are still maintaining economic growth of 3.6%. Perfect policy, Mr. Speaker. Nothing, there is nothing in that policy. There is not, and I suspect what that document did is it took them by surprise.
Yes, it did.
Because they were expecting, and there were rumors that the price of chicken back was going up, that the Prime Minister would put all sorts of taxes, the price of chicken back is going up. Mr. Speaker, again, flashing mirrors. I have explained how the price of these things go up. The price of these items only go up when the cost increases from outside, not from local sources. But Mr. Speaker, I don't think I must waste any more of my time to speak about these accusations and these. It made no sense. The member from Miko North, Mr. Speaker, I've never heard him so bad. I've never heard him that bad. He was at his worst. He was at his worst, Mr. Speaker. The member for Central Catteries, well, that is. Mr. Speaker, let us deal with some more serious things, and let me quickly run to the portfolio that I have the privilege to be the minister for, which is the portfolio for commerce, tourism, investment, and consumer affairs. Mr. Speaker, manufacturing output this year expanded by over 6% to $146.3 million at current prices. And credit to the sector, Mr. Speaker, actually doubled to $103 million, but value added in that sector decreased. And the simple reason why it decreased, Mr. Speaker, because of the measure, the way it is calculated on a base year, so value added decreased. Manufacturing, Mr. Speaker, employs 7% of the labor force, and St. Lucia continues to have some world-class firms. Our goods are exported to the United Kingdom, our goods are exported to the United States, our goods are exported to as far as Africa, goods produced in St. Lucia. And we'll continue, Mr. Speaker, we'll continue to bring these manufacturers up, first of all, to be able to compete in the regional market for the CSME and then in the global market. But Mr. Speaker, there is one issue that the manufacturers in Lucia are concerned of, and I am concerned of, Mr. Speaker. It is the consumption tax regime. In the present regime, Mr. Speaker, consumption tax is paid on wholesale prices. And that causes the goods produced in St. Lucia to be uncompetitive with goods produced from other countries. We have to find a way to charge consumption tax on the ex-factory cost of these goods. What happens is that when the tax is charged on the wholesale price, the cost to the consumer increases. And whereas when the goods are imported, Mr. Speaker, there is no tax for these imported goods, particularly when they come from CARICOM. So we need to change, and we need to find, and the Ministry of Commerce is working with the Ministry of Finance. I've promised the manufacturer of this country that policy is a policy that the government of St. Lucia will enact. And hopefully, during this year, we can meet with the Ministry of Finance so we can cause the consumption tax to be charged on the factory cost and not on the wholesale prices. Mr. Speaker, on the issue of tarification that I spoke to last year, tarification is a serious and a very involved process. And we have completed the memo. The memo will come to cabinet shortly. So tariff, because we have to stop the system of licensing. The only licenses will remain are the goods on Article 56. But the tarification exercise will take place. We've completed it, and hopefully most goods in St. Lucia will be under tariff system later this year. Mr. Speaker, in the ministry, we need to strike a balance between the competing interests. On one hand, we have to deal with consumers, and on the other hand, we have to deal with business people, Mr. Speaker. We have to strike that balance. We have to act as a policy-making agency, and we also have to act to resolve conflicts, a conflict resolution agency. To fulfill this mandate, Mr. Speaker, there is need to reassess the scope, the mission, and the operating systems of the ministry. We have embarked on a strategic repositioning of the ministry to enable it to continue to fulfill its mandate in this new global order, and in particular within the Caribbean single market and economy. The ministry aims at developing and strengthening partnerships and collaboration with the private sector to promote and foster the growth of business in St. Lucia, with a particular emphasis on small business. Mr. Speaker, in my last budget address, I informed you of the strategic repositioning process taking place in the ministry. And I'm pleased to report, Mr. Speaker, that with the help of the OPSR, a team of local consultants have prepared a strategic plan for the repositioning and a plan of action for implementation. The plan will be tabled in cabinet this year for consideration and for approval. It is hoped that in the short term, the recommendations will be implemented after approval to allow us to document and report the change process so we can continue with the other aspects of the repositioning exercise. I also informed Mr. Speaker of a national investment strategy, and the Prime Minister outlined, and I will speak to later, the level of investment that will happen in this country this year. And I have a check, Mr. Speaker, for the member of Mekong North who made the point that these investments are smoke and mirrors. Let me inform you, Mr. Speaker, that the Plantation Beach Hotel that the Prime Minister spoke about, it has commenced. It is near completion, and the second and third phases have started. So Plantation Beach has started. The Anshasne Hotel that the Prime Minister spoke about, the work has started, and on the 24 top end suite, and it's going to be completed in January. You can go there and check it for yourself. Marigold Bay has started. You can go and check it for yourself. Coco Hotel has started. You can go and check it for yourself. The Villa, the Rainbow Hotel is completed. Caleb, Mrs. Speaker, I don't want to be that diverted, but let me explain to you how investments take place. What the government does, Mr. Speaker, the government creates the enabling environment for the investment. But the investor is the one who put the money. So if the investor comes and tells the government, I am going to make an investment, and the government gives the incentives, the government can't push behind the investor pockets. The government can't push behind the investor pockets. So all the government can do is to create the environment, give the incentive, and the investor will do the rest. But Mr. Speaker, to consolidate that investment, we have putting in place a national investment strategy. And during the year under review, the work was intensified and a Director of Investment Coordination was appointed. Mr. Speaker, the Director of Investment Coordination works with and complements the work of the National Development Corporation, but provides direct contact to allow the process of government to work in an effective and timely manner. The Director of Investment Coordination is responsible for investment policy coordination among the relevant ministries, departments, title bodies, and other public sector agencies involved in investment facilitation approval. Mr. Speaker, what the government wants to do is to streamline the investment process. So we've appointed that director to streamline the process so the government functions can be easier and the investor can have a direct link with the government agencies. Mr. Speaker, the investment strategy is being developed in collaboration with the private sector and the OECD, and is expected to have direct linkages with the National Export Development Strategy. Investment is dynamic, Mr. Speaker, and competitive, and our aim is to provide an environment that will attract and sustain direct foreign and local investment, thus creating jobs and expanding the economy. And if you hear from the list outlined and from the new projects, that investment policy is working, but we need to put it together in a strategy so to ease the unemployment that you speak about. To create an environment, Mr. Speaker, we need to review the Fiscal Incentive Act. That act, Mr. Speaker, the Fiscal Incentive Act was enacted in 1974.
For your colleague.
The services of the Commonwealth Secretariat were secured to help review and propose a new incentive regime that is compatible with modern day reality. The aim of this study, Mr. Speaker, the study on the fiscal incentives, is to provide guidance on how St. Lucia can attain best practices and enhance the effectiveness of its investment incentive schemes in contributing to a coherent development strategy that is consistent with the WTO rules. Because, Mr. Speaker, St. Lucia is not in isolation. So you cannot have an investment strategy that's not compatible with the rules of WTO. We are part of a global environment. The study found evidence is that the take-up rate of incentives has increased and the value of concessions has been greatest in the services sector, especially tourism. That is where the government has given the most incentives. The study found that the proposals under the National Export Development Strategy and the development of the agricultural sector in all major respects are WTO compatible. What that means is linkages. the incentives that the Prime Minister announced for the agricultural sector, they are compatible with the export development strategy. While incentives are necessary, Mr. Speaker, they are not a sufficient condition for investment. There is need for high quality infrastructure and a productive workforce to support the investment opportunities. During the year under review, Mr. Speaker, the government continued with its policy of investments, but this year the ministry will implement a more rigorous monitoring system so as to accurately measure the effectiveness of the incentives granted. We continue to grant the incentives, but we have to monitor them to make sure that the promises made by the developers and by the investors to make sure that they meet these promises. Mr. Speaker, the National Export Development Strategy process started in 2003 and was completed in 2004. The ministry worked closely with the Tunisia Chamber of Commerce, the National Trade Center, and a local consultant. We are marrying ideas. The Chamber of Commerce, the International Trade Center, and a local consultant, so that there was collaboration and dialogue. And this year, the Prime Minister has allowed $200,000 for the startup or the implementation stage of the National Export Strategy. The fundamental elements of the National Export Development Strategy, Mr. Speaker, are based on market intelligence, product development, and diversification in 10 priority sectors: agriculture, architecture, arts and entertainment, beverages, chemicals, agro-processed goods, information technology, integrated marketing and communications, nursing services, and tourism. Mr. Speaker, the main thrust of the National Export Development Strategy is to increase the value and volume of exports to regional and extra-regional markets in the 10 priority sectors. This will be achieved through two primary approaches: one, product service development, and product service diversification. The National Export Development Strategy will help sustain the increasing exports experienced this year. And if you know, Mr. Speaker, we experienced an increase in exports this year over last year. Even without the implementation of that strategy, we have experienced an increase in exports, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, while that development strategy is being developed, there's going to be need for policy and legislative support to effect that strategy. Mr. Speaker, a common word is the Caribbean single market and economy. Everybody speaks now about the Caribbean single market and economy. The question is, Mr. Speaker, how can we exist by ourselves? We have no choice. We have to be involved in a Caribbean single market and economy. We cannot do it alone. The whole world is forming into alliances. The Americans are forming alliances. Everyone is forming. We have to form an alliance. NAFTA and the impending FTA make it... NAFTA and the impending Toulouse. NAFTA and the impending FTA make alliances necessary, economic alliances. So, Mr. Speaker, if the much larger nations are getting involved in alliances, how can the Caribbean survive between these large landmasses? Mr. Speaker, the CSME is the most significant event for the region since adult suffrage in 1951 and the Federation in 1958. If we are to protect our interests as a region in the world economy, we need to combine our resources to enable us to compete in the global economy. The CSME Treaty is in essence an amendment of the Treaty of Chagaramas, with 9 new protocols now incorporated as chapters in the revised treaty. The CSME, although conceived as a plan by governments of the Caribbean community to facilitate the development of member states, is not a political union. The CSME is not a political union. In essence, the CSME represents a deepening of the integration process through the creation of an integrated market for goods and services and the free flow of capital and individuals across traditional borders. The CSME will seek to harmonize and coordinate foreign exchange, interest rate policies, tax regimes, laws, and eventually a common currency for all its member states, eventually. The CSME means, Mr. Speaker, that instead of 238 square miles, St. Lucia could be the entire Caribbean basin, where workers in St. Lucia could benefit from expanded job opportunities as a consequence of the free movement of labor, business, and investment. While the CSM, Mr. Speaker, has the potential to transform the economies of small Caribbean states like St. Lucia, this will not happen overnight. The experience will not be seamless and painless. The most fundamental aspects of the CSME involve the willingness to make and to accept change. That willingness must be shared on the part of both firms, business owners, workers, and the general public. Firms will have to engage the use of competent and qualified personnel to conduct the relevant market research, product development activities, and strategic planning. Business simply cannot continue to be as usual. There must be a willingness to share ideas, network, and enter into joint ventures and strategic alliances to create business synergies. See what you talk about, member from Mekong North. Businesses have to form synergies. They have to expand. They have to form alliances. They have to consolidate. Mr. Speaker, workers will have to examine how they can relate to that new workplace. Initiatives must be taken to acquire the appropriate skill and in some cases undertake retraining to become marketable in the new job market in the expanded Caribbean economic space. The CSME is basically a single space for the Caribbean region, where there will be free movement of ideas, free movement of labor, free movement of capital. But Mr. Speaker, with the CSME, there must be education. And in order to sensitize our nationals, the ministry has embarked on a public education program which covers not only the aims and objectives of CSME, but to equip citizens with the tools that will allow them to identify the opportunities, threats, and weaknesses in the revised Treaty of Chagaramas. Whilst it is the role of government to ensure that the nation is informed and information is properly distributed among its people, the education for St. Lucia, for every man, woman, and child, must take personal responsibility to educate themselves on the subject. No public education program, no matter how effective, could succeed without the interest of the targeted population. My message is, Mr. Speaker, is the people must be interested and must seek information on the CSME. Having said so, Mr. Speaker, I know a lot has been said that the government has not educated people on the CSME. Mr. Speaker, I will outline briefly, with your permission, the public education program of the Ministry of Commerce and how that program and the amount of education and discussion and dialogue that this government, through the ministry, has initiated on the CSME, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, time will not allow me to mention all the organizations. But from since the education policy was launched from September, we have spoken to organizations, Civil Service Association, Marshall Women's League, Caribbean Women's Conference, Tapion Hospital. We had a meeting at the Lavery Parish Hall, National Workers Union, Customs Junior Officers, the Community of Bellevue, the Nurses Association, SLASPA General Staff, the Garage Association, Rotary, Lands, Morissette Garage, Agrico, the student body of the Sir Alfred Lewis Community College, the Beaufort Secondary School. It is a number that education process is continuing. So it is not fair to say that the government has not told people about the CSME. The records are clear, Mr. Speaker. It is up to us now, up to the citizens of St. Lucia, to educate themselves with the help of the government on the CSME. Mr. Speaker, the small business is an area of the economy that the government is close to the government's heart. The government has not only enacted small business legislation, but has created financing for small business and has established through SEDU the vehicle by which small business will develop. 202 small businesses, Mr. Speaker, in the year under review were assisted in receiving loans totaling over $700,000. 220 small businesses, Mr. Speaker, were assisted in receiving loans totaling $757. 202 entrepreneurs were trained in small business management, computer aided small business management, financial management, etc. 65 small businesses were facilitated in market and product development in collaboration with the National Bureau of Standards. 15 businesses, this government gave 15 new businesses were given concessions on the importation of raw materials, equipment, and accessories. That is our record on small business, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, CEDU is involved in organizing project managers and management consultants to work together in the coalition of services, because we've decided that the nation needs a coalition of service providers. So the people who provide services, the architects, the engineers, the lawyers, the accountants, they can come together in a coalition of service providers, so when the CSME comes into being, they can compete with the rest of the region. And they have taken the advice of the ministry and they have formed that coalition of service providers. Mr. Speaker, CEDU has also collaborated with the National Council for Disabled Persons to identify projects, resources, and resource persons for the purpose of developing programs for the National Council to move towards sustainability. Mr. Speaker, in Consumer Affairs, I've noted earlier that we've maintained stability in the price of flour, rice, and sugar despite changes in the world market prices. We have maintained the markup on essential foods to ensure that there is no excessive profiteering, and any price changes are due to external factors. The Consumer Affairs Division of the Ministry resolved 43 complaints by consumers, that's avoiding conflict between consumers and producers. Mr. Speaker, only last month we had a problem with sugar, and the way we handled that sugar problem, it was clear, it was transparent. We did not hide. We didn't go back to the days of dirty sugar a few years ago. We were clear. We told the public there was a problem with the sugar. We withdrew it from the market, and the process was handled in a professional and transparent manner, and no one has complained.
Because the honourable member has 15 minutes remaining to make his contribution.
Mr. Speaker, we are developing an institutional framework for competition authority in St. Lucia in keeping with our CSME obligations. Mr. Speaker, we are developing competition legislation to deal with the mergers and the strategic alliances that will take place, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the long-awaited Consumer Protection Bill, and I know the people of St. Lucia are waiting for the Consumer Protection Bill, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, it is the style of the ministry to have consultation. A Consumer Protection Bill is a serious issue. You cannot disadvantage one group, or you cannot create problems for another. Right now, I am pleased to announce that the new Consumer Protection Act is with the Attorney General's office, and hopefully that bill should pass this year. Mr. Speaker, we have begun a review of the Higher Purchase Act, so that people who buy their goods at higher purchase, the Higher Purchase Ordinance is a 1940 ordinance. It's outdated, it's outmoded. We are beginning to review it, so again, people who buy from higher purchase items cannot be exploited. We are reviewing the law, but again, we have to consult with everyone who is involved so that they can be equal, they can be quality, and there can be transparency and collaboration. But Mr. Speaker, a few months ago, I wrote the banks of St. Lucia, and I mentioned the profit that the banks are making. I wrote to the banks, and I told them that it was unfair for the charges that they were levying on the public of St. Lucia for the provision of information. The banks, Mr. Speaker, none of the banks had a courtesy to respond to my letter. No, they didn't. But the Central Bank said that they are reviewing the process. But I still maintain, Mr. Speaker, I still maintain that the charges by the commercial banks for information on people's accounts, these charges are too high, and these charges will have to be reduced. by some means or the others. And if it means legislation, that may have to happen, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the budget address was consolidating gains, developing a world-class destination, and enhancing human resource capacity. Mr. Speaker, that falls squarely in the shoulders of the St. Lucia Bureau of Standards. Mr. Speaker, the impact of the work of the Bureau of Standards is more important now than ever before, as the future stability and growth of the institutional economy depends almost exclusively on the national ability to provide quality and increase the level of output from manufacturing, agriculture, and the service sectors. This growth, Mr. Speaker, has to take place within a framework of a rapidly growing open global economy in which barriers to trade and quantitative restrictions and tariffs are being slowly eliminated. Standards, quality assurance, and metrology are needed now. The foundations on which supplier purchase acceptance and technical regulation and implementation are based. This is particularly evident by the increasing demand by both the service and manufacturing sectors to become certified against internationally recognized standards, such as the ISO 9000 and the hazard analysis critical control points for food safety systems. More businesses now, Mr. Speaker, are trying to get this international certification so they can trade in the open market, they can trade in the global economy. And the work of the Bureau is key. St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker, now has 88 standards. 88 national standards. Standards in tourism, electrical standards, manufacturing standards, standards in construction, in consumer safety, Mr. Speaker. More than 88 standards. Standards in agriculture, in tourism, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, one of the most effective policies of the Bureau was the Compulsory Standards Compliance Program, CSCP. The CSCP program, Mr. Speaker, includes import monitoring and market surveillance activities, further expanded in scope this year to include a new component for the monitoring and inspection of all new and used tires imported and sold on the market. Since the onset of this inspection program in September 2004, more than 20% of the tires imported in St. Lucia were found to be unsafe and non-compliant with national standards for the tires of passenger vehicles, and they were rejected by the Bureau of Standards. 20% of the tires imported in St. Lucia. The reduction, Mr. Speaker, of the quality of poor tires being dumped in the local market will have a positive impact on the environment and on road users. Through the CSCP program, Mr. Speaker, the quality of imported Christmas tree lights and other decorative lighting articles will be monitored for compliance to the relevant national standard during the 2004 Christmas season. And you must note, Mr. Speaker, that for the 2004 Christmas season, there was not one fire caused by electricity, by Christmas tree lights. The records will show, Mr. Speaker, that because of this program, there was no fires were caused by electricity shortages, or not shortages, electricity faults in the Christmas tree lights.
The honourable member has 5 minutes left to make his contribution.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move for the suspension of Standing Order 328 to permit the honourable minister for Commerce, Tourism, Investment and Consumer Affairs an additional 1 hour within which to complete his presentation to this honourable house.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order 32, Sub-Order 10, be suspended to allow the Honourable Member for Tourism, etc., an additional 60 minutes to make his contribution. I now put the question. As many who are of that opinion, say aye. As many who are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. Leave it granted, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much, Honourable Colleague. Mr. Speaker, the CSCP program found that there were non-compliant flipping plugs and bottled water from imported bottled water, and they were rejected or seized under this program, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Bureau also runs a program called the Certificate of Free Sale program, the Certificate of Free Sale. And what that program does, Mr. Speaker, is it assists local exporters to gain entry of their products into countries within the CARICOM region. So, Mr. Speaker, the Bureau also deals with the verification of gas pumps. And Mr. Speaker, during the verification of gas pumps by the Bureau, 265 pumps were verified island-wide. 28% of these pumps were found to be delivering gas out of the legally accepted tolerance level. Although most of these pumps were recalibrated, four of these pumps had to be rejected as a result of the incapability in meeting the acceptable tolerance level. Mr. Speaker, because again of the work of the Bureau in protecting consumers, we found that consumers were either being shortchanged or otherwise as far as gas was concerned, and we rectified that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Bureau also verifies scales in its metrology unit. It verifies that the scales are properly calibrated, and so when you buy goods, you get the proper measure. And then the last work of the Bureau is, the work the Bureau is doing now is the working with the people who are building the roads, CCI, a company contracted by the government to undertake the road and bridge construction projects. And the Bureau measures the strength of the concrete mix used for construction to ensure that the mix is correct and the adequate amount of cement, stone, etc. Mr. Speaker, the skills used in the retail trade and in manufacturing are also verified by the Bureau. Mr. Speaker, this year, St. Lucia will begin the process of metrication. We have to leave the old imperial measure of pounds, etc., and go to pounds and move to kilos and meters and move from gallons and move to liters, etc., Mr. Speaker. So we're going to begin that process. Cabinet has endorsed the document and the metrication, but it's a whole process. It will not happen overnight, Mr. Speaker. It's a whole process, but the process of education will continue, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, as you will agree with me, that the Ministry of Commerce has been extremely busy in all its agencies, and that work has impacted on the people of St. Lucia directly, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I will move now to my other portfolio, which is the Ministry of Tourism. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister declared this year to be basically the year of tourism. The investments of this country, the investments coming to the country, were coming mainly from the tourism sector, and he listed about $1 billion worth of investment in tourism, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this year, the tourism industry did well. It did very well for the people of St. Lucia. 204, Mr. Speaker, was our best year for tourism. 298,431 silver visitors visited St. Lucia this year, surpassing the best year of 2003. So, Mr. Speaker, when the Honourable Member speaks about comparing changes, Mr. Speaker, you must use the best year. And 2004 was our best year. Silver visitors increased by 7.8%. Bed night increased by 6%. And visitor expenditure, a key factor, increased by 15.4%. And growth in arrivals in St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker, surpassed growth in arrivals from our major competitors. Cruise arrivals increased by 22.4%, and yachting arrivals. The government, in diversifying its tourism offerings, also pays attention to yachting. You know about the ARC, etc. The yachting arrivals increased by 6.2%, Mr. Speaker. Each of the major markets achieved growth in 2004. USA arrivals increased by 9.2%, reaching a record of 107,000 visitors. UK arrivals increased by 7.9%, and arrivals from the Caribbean increased by 5.2%, Mr. Speaker. What is peculiar in these figures, Mr. Speaker, is we have noticed a change in the seasonal nature of arrivals. the differences in the levels of silver visitors between the high and low seasons has been disappearing. For the 11 months, the monthly stillover arrivals were above $21,000. And the peak travel months were April, July, August, and May, in that order. And these months are outside the traditional winter season. So what we're noting, Mr. Speaker, is that instead the seasonality of the tourism industry, and that tells a lie to some of the things we hear about the industry, the seasonality of the tourism industry is changing. Before, the highest arrivals used to be in December and January and February. Now it's apart from it's spreading throughout the year, and the highest arrivals are in July, August, and May. That speaks, Mr. Speaker, to the marketing policies of the government for the Central Tourist Board. That's what it speaks to, Mr. Speaker, in that we can cause the seasonality to change and it can cause the workers, and that is why this year, Mr. Speaker, and this year, the level of layoffs in the industry were very low, if any. Mr. Speaker, for the first quarter of 2005, for this year, the tourism performance, it continues to do well. The most recent statistics, Mr. Speaker, show that in January, from January to March, tourism has grown by 15.6% between January to March, Mr. Speaker, with our strongest markets being the US, the UK, and the Caribbean. Mr. Speaker, we won several accolades this year. Your humble servant was on the Travel Agent magazine, Mr. Speaker. Over 500,000 visitors. I was there for other reasons too, but I was in the Travel Agent on the Travel Agent magazine, Mr. Speaker. We also won, Mr. Speaker, the CHA Crystal Palm Award, Mr. Speaker. And what is possible, Mr. Speaker? One of our best achievements, Mr. Speaker, is that Oprah Winfrey, on her show on Wednesday, declared, and I want to quote, Mr. Speaker, and it's a message coming from our public relations people in the States. It says, "We have some great news to share with you. The Oprah Winfrey TV show, as well as the May issue of the Oprah magazine, featured St. Lucia's Peter Mountains as the first out of five must-see places in the world, Mr. Speaker." Five places to see in your lifetime. Five places, Mr. Speaker. St. Lucia is first. It says the pitons, two volcano spires that shoot out of the Caribbean island of St. Lucia, were named a United Nations World Heritage Site, which puts them in a class with the most spectacular protected ecologies in the world, Mr. Speaker. St. Lucia. But, Mr. Speaker, despite that success, Mr. Speaker, and we won several other awards. Eh? The Tourist Board won the second best tourism agency. We won honeymoon destination for the fifth best honeymoon destination from Bright Magazine. Some of our hotels won awards, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, despite that success, Mr. Speaker, there are some critical issues facing St. Lucia's tourism, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister spoke about preparation for World Cup, Mr. Speaker. And some people worry and ask, what will happen after 2007? What will happen, Mr. Speaker, is that the country will have at least 1,000 new hotel rooms with a trained and motivated workforce. There will be permanent improvements to our infrastructure, our roads, our airports, our seaports. But most of all, Mr. Speaker, there will be the legacy effect for the thousands of people who visited St. Lucia for the Games. They will return home with a feel-good attitude and hopefully plan to return to St. Lucia for a holiday. But most likely, they will tell their friends and their relatives about St. Lucia. Most importantly, Mr. Speaker, over 1.5 billion people would have viewed on their television screens and heard through radio broadcasts about our island. This exposure, Mr. Speaker, we could never afford. And our tourism industry will reap some benefit from that promotion. It is left to us, Mr. Speaker, the people of St. Lucia, to creatively design opportunities so that we can benefit from the World Cup. The government has committed over $50 million towards Cricket World Cup. The government has set the platform with the necessary incentives. Our cricket ground is ready, Mr. Speaker. Fact is, Mr. Speaker, we are the most advanced island in terms of readiness for the World Cup. And that has been verified, Mr. Speaker. Dr. Ali Barker made a statement when he was here last week. And in London recently, Mr. Speaker, I met several people, including reporters, some of the best sports magazines and sports newspapers in the world. And they said that St. Lucia was the most ready country for the World Cup because we have the basic infrastructure necessary, which is the cricket ground. Mr. Speaker, For the World Cup cricket, we need new rooms. And our accommodation stock is increasing, and a number of high-quality rooms are under construction or near completion. Discovery on Marigot Bay, and Chastney Villas, Cocoa Palm, Plantation Beach Villas, and the harbor at Rodney Bay. 500 rooms in total are all expected to be open for the winter season this year. Plus the fact, Mr. Speaker, the newly refurbished Cocoa Bay, the former Club Med, is now operating with 254 extra rooms, and they've begun expansion for some more rooms. That is work on the ground. That's work on the ground, Mr. Speaker. And the Village Inn and Spa, formerly the Rainbow Hotel, has renovated and has expanded its facilities. These rooms are on the ground. These are not proposals, Mr. Speaker. They are tangible. They are verifiable and they are on the ground. Mr. Speaker, as we seek to accommodate the visitors and expand our tourism industry to some 7,000 rooms, the government has passed legislation to provide generous incentives to developers willing and able to expand hotels or other forms of accommodation. Since the passing of the legislation in January 2005, the Ministry of Tourism has processed 9 applications on the Cricket World Cup Tourism Accommodation Incentives Act. And a further 3 applications are currently being processed, accounting for some 1,000 additional rooms. 1,000 more, Mr. Speaker. So we have 500 on the ground already and another 1,000 in process because of the applications that we have. Now, Mr. Speaker, we'll continue to encourage developers to take advantage of new incentives up to the end of 2005. However, the reality is we will still require additional rooms in order to host, at least to host, Cricket World Cup 2007. In this regard, the Ministry of Tourism is turning to the bed and breakfast sector as outlined by the Prime Minister. Bed and breakfast establishments for the purposes of St. Lucia are categorized as accommodation of under 6 rooms that do not offer kitchen or restaurant facilities on property. Indeed, the development of the bed and breakfast sector will be a challenge. However, if developed, we believe that we can create a vibrant bed and breakfast sector, not just for the year 2007, but for the years after that. To this end, Mr. Speaker, the Ministry will establish in the new fiscal year a special project unit that will facilitate the growth in the bed and breakfast accommodation. The unit, Mr. Speaker, will establish criteria for individuals desirous of entering into this accommodation sector, that's bed and breakfast. It will provide technical assistance both at the conceptual phase and when operational. It will inspect establishments to ensure compliance of minimum standards in the bed and breakfast sector. It will hold training programs in hospitality management and provide the Lucia Tourist Board and other recognized central reservations companies with details to facilitate the sale of the individual rooms, and the unit will work closely with the Cricket World Cup St. Lucia Incorporated in hosting visitors for Cricket World Cup, Mr. Speaker. Under the National Standards Act, Mr. Speaker, standards have been established for tourism accommodation. These standards will be utilized in developing the criteria for the bed and breakfast sector. The special bed and breakfast project units will not only seek to increase the number of rooms available, but to enhance the existing guest houses. And I'll move, Mr. Speaker, to the business of small hotels. Mr. Speaker, while occupancy in our small hotels improved this year, it improved to 59.6%, small hotels still face challenges. We have to be honest, Mr. Speaker, and we have to agree that small hotels still face challenges. The challenges they face, Mr. Speaker, is they have to maintain basically the same standards as large hotels with less resources. They have to fulfill rigorous obligations that cover health and safety, hazard analysis, and the requirements of the Federation of Tour Operators Code of Practice. They are subject to audits to ensure compliance before they can be sold by international tour operators. Harsh as this may seem, Mr. Speaker, there are only one set of standards. These are world standards, and there's nothing like a St. Lucia standard. So when you sell in a small hotel, you have to meet world standards, Mr. Speaker. And that is why small hotels are under some sort of stress. But the government, Mr. Speaker, will continue to work with small hotels to ensure that they meet the standards demanded. We'll continue to work with the small hotel sector on providing appropriate training through the OAS-funded Small Tourism Enterprise Program, another step. This year, we were able to train small hotel employees in the area of front desk, small hotel owners in business operations management, and food and beverage management. For the OAS-funded project for small tourism enterprises, the ministry will also be able to offer culinary training to several restaurants for a partnership with the Culinary Institute of America. The first phase was a product assessment. Phase 2 covers the areas of food safety, menu planning, use of local ingredients in the cuisine, food preparation, and presentation. The final phase of the training program will be a practical session taking place in the Bahamas next week. Mr. Speaker, that is what we're doing for small hotels. So whilst we are developing the larger properties, we are also working with the smaller properties because we have to bring them up to world standards. And that was clear, Mr. Speaker, in a visit that we held with a major tour operator where we were trying to sell these small hotels, and the operator was saying to us that these hotels have to come to world standards in order that they can be put on the catalogs for these large operators. Airlift, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, St. Lucia has been relatively successful in obtaining new and additional air services to our island. You can't have tourism if you don't have airlift. The tourists must come here, and the way they have to come is by plane. Successful negotiations have taken place with Britannia, BMI out of the UK, and Delta Airlines and American Airlines out of the US. However, this has not come without a cost, as marketing efforts are expected to increase in these markets in order to ensure the success and maintenance of these flights. As other destinations, Mr. Speaker, are underwriting airline operational costs, Mr. Speaker, our competitors are actually paying for airlines to come to St. Lucia. And that is the competition we have to deal with. They are paying for airlines to come to their countries, Mr. Speaker. Our competitors, they are paying the airlines to come to their countries. Mr. Speaker, St. Lucia continues to be challenged with the high cost of fuel and the fact that airline companies continue to lose money. We have initiated discussions with other airlines to introduce service into St. Lucia and to expand the existing routes. And I will report to you, Mr. Speaker, as these discussions continue. In this fiscal year, Mr. Speaker, I have directed the St. Lucia Tourist Board to concentrate its efforts on increasing airlift to St. Lucia so as to meet the demand of the new rooms expected to come on stream over the next 2 years. To this end, Mr. Speaker, the St. Lucia Tourist Board will implement an airline capacity development and retention program, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I know you want to ask me, why is Air Jamaica going to Barbados and Grenada and not coming to St. Lucia? Simple reason. Very simple. Very simple. Barbados, Mr. Speaker, will serve as a hub. Barbados will serve as a hub, and Grenada has no other international flights, so Air Jamaica almost has a monopoly in Grenada. No other, not There is no speaker this week. That's the reason why Air Jamaica isn't coming. But hopefully this weekend, I'm having a meeting with the Air Jamaica people to see if we can resolve that problem. So there is no magic or there is no secret in the fact that Air Jamaica is only going to Barbados and Grenada and not coming to St. Lucia. Air Jamaica, Mr. Speaker, has lost over $800 million. They're under tremendous stress, Mr. Speaker. So they have to rationalize their routes. And not only St. Lucia, they're not going to Antigua, several other destinations, and destinations in North America also. So there's no magic or there's no secret why they're not coming to St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, tourism is about people. And word of mouth continues to be a powerful marketing tool. Our country, Mr. Speaker, is renowned for its beauty. However, the natural beauty, Mr. Speaker, of St. Lucia must not be tarnished by human beings. What I mean, Mr. Speaker, is that harassment, bad manners, overpricing, Mr. Speaker, must not exist within the St. Lucia tourism product. Each one must be an advocate for enhancing the visitor experience. The fact is, when we enhance the visitor experience, we are in fact improving the quality of life for us as residents of St. Lucia. All our tourism services must be world-class, Mr. Speaker. We cannot compromise on standards. And every aspect of our tourism services must be world-class, Mr. Speaker. In this regard, we have sought to improve the transportation sector and will continue this year. It was this government, Mr. Speaker, that granted duty-free in concessions to taxi drivers. It was this government, Mr. Speaker, it was this government who gave concessions to taxi drivers, not the government. The government is not sure about it. Mr. Speaker, we have granted concessions to taxi drivers valued at over $7 million from the time these concessions started. After we had a slight pause, Mr. Speaker, to regularize and regulate the sector, these concessions will recommence this month. And the aim of these concessions is to improve the quality of the taxi fleets. There will also be regulations and procedures for the provision of taxi services. Our taxi drivers are too important. They are one of the most important people in the tourism industry. Mr. Speaker, the Ministry of Tourism continues to regulate and monitor the services provided, but we cannot determine or dictate private sector or business relations, as these are covered by usual commercial and contract law. Our product enhancement services continue, Mr. Speaker, and these include concessions for the upgrades of restaurants and other forms of entertainment. We want to have a holistic view of the tourism industry. The product must be developed in a holistic fashion. So you have to improve taxis, you have to build hotels, you have to improve restaurants, and you have to create entertainment. This is what the ministry is doing, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, visitor safety and security is another critical issue for the tourism industry. It is most certainly a product issue, but it impacts directly on the tourism industry, Mr. Speaker. Marketing dollars are wasted if our visitors perceive St. Lucia to be unsafe. Everyone must join in the fight against harassment. Everyone must join, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, sometimes you see people walking past and other people are harassing visitors and locals, and it's in a blind eye, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have to protect it. And when you stop harassment for visitors, as I said before, you are stopping harassment for locals. So each one, not only the police, each one of us must help in that fight against harassment, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, marketing of our tourism industry is critical if we have to take advantage of the new developments in accommodation, the ELIF, and the products offerings. The St. Lucia Tourism Board this year will use four key marketing approaches. One, the launching of a new consumer campaign. Two, the preparation of new creatives, that is new advertising material. Three, aggressive and targeted e-marketing strategy. And four, airline services development program. These are the four main objectives of the tourist board this year as far as marketing is concerned. They'll continue to explore the traditional niche markets such as weddings and honeymoons and the sports conference incentives and yachting, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, several times you hear people talk about government's commitment to tourism. And Mr. Speaker, I've brought to make a record of the House and to prove that the government's subvention to the tourist board has increased over time from since we are in power. The records are clear, Mr. Speaker. In 1995, the tourist board received $9 million. In 1996, the tourist board received $9.2 million. In 1997, the tourist board received $11.6 million for subvention from the government. In 1998, $12.3 million. In 1999, $14.6 million. In 2000, $13.8 million. In 2001, $14.3 million. 2002, $20 million. 2003, $20.5 million. 2004, $20.5 million. 2005, $24 million. Between 1995 and the year 2005, when in the 10 years, Mr. Speaker, and out of these 10 years, we have been in power for 8 years, the subvention to the tourist board has increased by over 225%. And you talk about the commitment of this government towards tourism and towards tourism marketing, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, of course, we need more money for marketing. Of course. But Mr. Speaker, we can only work within our means. The government can only give what it has. We have to build schools, we have to build prisons, we have to build hospitals, we have to build roads, we have to do
children under threat,
etc. So Mr. Speaker, the government is committed and we have increased that subvention to the St. Lucia Tourist Board, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the St. Lucia Tourist Board, its marketing efforts are achieving great results. However, global competition and the high spending by other destinations demand that the tourist board is creative, they use their money wisely, and they continually explore new avenues, Mr. Speaker. Global competition is not only from the region. It's from countries far and wide. Countries you would not believe are involved in tourism. We have to develop St. Lucia as a quality destination offering a right mix of services and entertainment, Mr. Speaker. And the marketing plan of the St. Lucia Tourist Board seeks to maximize the available resources and maintain a deliverable marketing program. Mr. Speaker, details about the World Cup. I'll give you an example. For the two one-day internationals held in St. Lucia, the English One Day Internationals, 6,712 people visited St. Lucia. 6,712 people. Out of that, 93.3% came from the United Kingdom. Mr. Speaker, so that means when we make projections of 18,000 for World Cup, these projections are very conservative and can happen because 6,000 visited St. Lucia for the one-day internationals. Mr. Speaker, the Tourism Sector Strategy Action Plan, after some initial setbacks, the EU has funded that plan. The consultancy has been awarded to EMG Limited. And this strategy, Mr. Speaker, this plan is a prerequisite for accessing EU funds allocated for the tourism industry. The final output will be a clear work plan of action for the industry. Consultants have been encouraged to take on board several reports and recommendations already established, including the recommendations of the recently held Tourism Forum with the Cabinet Committee on Tourism. Mr. Speaker, we are not reinventing the wheel. We are just putting all these documents together so we can have a strategic plan that is workable, a work plan, so we can move the tourism industry forward. And that was a prerequisite for us to receive over $500,000 from the EU to develop our products. We had to do that, Mr. Speaker, to get the money from the EU. Mr. Speaker, we have a yachting development plan. I've mentioned earlier the importance of yachting. St. Lucia is becoming a serious yachting destination, so we can't let it develop on us or grow on us without a plan. And we put together a yachting plan with the help of the Office of Private Sector Relations, Mr. Speaker. The Nature Heritage Tourism Program. this year has included work on policy development, linkages, projective agriculture, and handicraft and enterprise development. Again, the Heritage Tourism Plan is a policy of this government, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, tourism must benefit the people of this country. Tourism must benefit the people of this country. And the Nature Heritage Tourism Program reaches to all districts, Mr. Speaker, reaches to all areas so that the benefits of tourism can be derived as many people as possible. Mr. Speaker, this year, the coming year, the Ministry of Tourism will continue the work it started in the last fiscal year. We'll have the completion and implementation of the Tourism Strategy and Action Plan. We'll finalize and implement the Yachting Development Plan. We'll enact a new St. Lucia Tourist Board Act. We'll establish a Tourism Product Development Agency. We'll have a national tourism public awareness campaign. We'll continue our assistance to small enterprises and have implementation monitoring of tourism standards. We'll evaluate the new hospitality institute concept. We'll have more rigid tourism incentive monitoring. We'll continue for our airline development, and with the St. Lucia Tourist Board, Mr. Speaker, we'll continue an efficient, practical, and workable marketing plan for St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want, before I end on tourism, I want to thank the members of the St. Lucia Hotel and Tourism Association, Mr. Speaker. We've worked together for the year to develop tourism. I want to also thank the Permanent Secretary and the members of the Tourist Board and the Chairman of the Tourist Board, Mr. Speaker, because the business of tourism may sound simple, Mr. Speaker, but it is not simple. There is a lot of conflict management. There are different people who have different agendas, and we in the tourism agencies, we have to put all these agendas together for the benefit of St. Lucia. And the records will show you, Mr. Speaker, that the tourism industry has done well and continues to do well, and if the help of the assistance and the commitment of the government, the Prime Minister and the Cabinet, the tourism industry will continue to derive the foreign exchange and improve quality of life for the people of St. Lucia, Mr. Speaker. On the matter of investment, Mr. Speaker, I've said how we've worked with the NDC on a few projects. We'll continue that work, Mr. Speaker, and the Prime Minister has outlined the investment prospects for St. Lucia, and these look extremely well. Mr. Speaker, before I end, I must speak about my constituency. It will be brief. Remiss of me if I don't speak of my constituency. Mr. Speaker, my constituency these days is a very interesting place. All sorts of apprentices, yes. All sorts of failed chairmen are in my constituency.
Unsuccessful
and failed too. They are all over my constituency, Mr. Speaker. Making all sorts of promises. Mr. Speaker, reinventing the wheel, the same old fashioned situation. Mr. Speaker, but what you must understand, Mr. Speaker, is anywhere they go in my constituency, as soon as they leave, I get a phone call. Anywhere they go, I know all about the Boloramas that they're planning. I know all about the offerings of money, etc. I know all about the Sokoramas. I know everything is getting everything, Mr. Speaker, because the people of my constituency know me and I know them. Mr. Speaker, I have confidence in them. They will not be bribed by Johnny Come Latelys who come from nowhere and want to represent them. They will not be bribed by them, Mr. Speaker. No amount of Sokorama size them. There was an experiment this morning, Mr. Speaker. An experiment this morning. And I think something. Let me give you some free advice. When you are in politics, Mr. Speaker, and you are trying to campaign in a constituency, you must not reinvent the wheel. You mustn't try the same old tricks that everybody tries before. You must do something different, Mr. Speaker. So what do? They go in a little hole and say, well, I just come to help. I'm not a politician. I just want to help you. So you have a little soccer rumble to organize. I'll give you a trophy. Mr. Speaker, Father forgive them, for they know not what they do. But Mr. Speaker, Castries East, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, by the time this election term is over, I would have performed and I would have fulfilled if not all, but most of the promises that I made when I was elected in 1997. Verifiable. On the ground. Let's go and see it. And that's what surprises them, Mr. Speaker. Because when they go in the constituency, people tell them, but Mr. Pierre, that do that. That's a surprise. That's a surprise, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this year, and again, I have got criticized for speaking about electricity. Mr. Speaker, that criticism will not stop, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, he who feels it most knows it. And I'm sure the member of Senator Cassius agrees with me, even one thing, that he who feels it most knows it. Mr. Speaker, when you have a country existing where just on that hill, on the Pave Hill, you have no electricity. Just on the hill there. A few minutes from Castries, Mr. Speaker. There is no electricity. You know why? Because the residents will ask $3,000 for one pole. When you as a representative or government can cause these people to get electricity, Mr. Speaker, it's an achievement. It's an achievement that you must be proud of because you have improved the quality of life for these people. And if you're accustomed of living a big life, that means nothing to you.
Exactly.
But you must go to the areas and ask these people, what did that electricity do for them? That is the question, Mr. Speaker. So I'm proud. I am proud. And I will repeat it when I cause people who have no electricity, when I cause them to have electricity, Mr. Speaker. Especially when they spend 30 years without it. So I'm not ashamed of it. And I will say it again. This year, Mr. Speaker, we have caused, this year, in the constituency of Castries East, we have caused, the information is available, we have caused an extra 27 consumers to get electricity, and then we have put in 25 street lamps. I'm not boasting. All I'm saying, Mr. Speaker, is these things improve the quality of life for the people of St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, you've heard about the landslides in Touj and Black Mali. I'm sure you heard about it, Mr. Speaker. And for start, the experience for these people were traumatic. Mr. Speaker, the government spent $16 million in the relocation of these people from Black Mali and Touj to Kareli in the constituency of Castries North. But Mr. Speaker, the government understands that we cannot continue to spend that kind of money for relocation. So a Professor Anderson from Bristol University, he came to St. Lucia to visit with the government, and in this budget, the government has put aside $1 million through the Ministry of Social Transformation, using the Poverty Reduction Fund to spend that money in the areas of Touj, Bagatelle, Pave, Mondidon, and it's Gabulan too, right? Mondidon and Dufort, Mr. Speaker. What that program will do, it will give guttering to homes. It will establish drainage on the ground to avoid the landslides that happen to these people every time rain falls. And Mr. Speaker, during the rainy season, when rain falls, Mr. Speaker, anytime rain falls and I get up at night, I cannot sleep. Because I know the next day I will hear that some house, there's been some slight somewhere, Mr. Speaker. And again, he who feels it most knows it. So if you do not know what it means to be living and to be afraid that your house will fall when rain falls, you will not know what happens when somebody causes that quality of life to improve. You will not know, Mr. Speaker. So you will ridicule it. You'll ridicule it. But the people who know, who will understand what that means, Mr. Speaker, and I'm very happy to announce to the people of Black Mali, Touj, Pave, Bagatelle, and Mondidon, for the member for Castries North, that this year we have $1 million more to spend on them so we can stop the landslides in that area through the assistance of the Providence Action Council. I'm proud and I'm happy to announce that, Mr. Speaker. You know that? Mr. Speaker, and the Minister of Social Transformation and the Providence Fund that is under attack, Mr. Speaker. You know why? You know why the PRF is under attack, Mr. Speaker? Because the PRF is delivering for poor people. They do not want us to improve the quality of life for the poor people of this country. No matter what we try, STEP program, they criticize it. YAP, they criticize it. National Skill Development Program, they criticize it. Bell Fund, they criticize it. Basic Needs Trust Fund, they criticize it. Building footpaths, they criticize it. Anything we try to do for the poor people of this country, they criticize it. Rice, flour, and sugar, they want to take it away from poor people. Rice, flour, and sugar, don't take it away. They want to import it themselves so that they can change the price so poor people cannot get these basic foodstuffs at the right prices, because they have to go and tell the people of St. Lucia when they're going to offer them Socoramas. Tell them what is the policy as it relates to the importation of rice, flour, and sugar. Mr. Speaker, the Entrepo Human Resource Development Center, another program and a project that I'm proud of as parliamentary representative. I'm proud, Mr. Speaker, because that Human Resource Development Center was promised from 1972. Mr. Speaker, we built it, and the Marshall Women's League, that August body in Marshall, they put together $120,000 for it, Mr. Speaker, and the government put the rest. Last year, I said to you, Mr. Speaker, that we are going to be expanding that Human Resource Development Center into a daycare center. I want to report to you, Mr. Speaker, that that day center has been constructed and is going to be receiving students in September this year. In September, Mr. Speaker. You see, I'm proud. No matter if they ridicule me, I'm proud of it, Mr. Speaker, because the 60 or so poor people who will put their children in that daycare center are going to be happy, and they're going to be able to go to work in the hotel that we build. Mr. Speaker, you know these infants in the daycare center, they will be there from birth up to 2.5 years, and they will be given meals, Mr. Speaker. They will be fed, and they will have a high quality of life in the daycare center, so their mothers and fathers can go to work without being concerned about them, Mr. Speaker. Improving the quality of life. And I want to invite you, Mr. Speaker, to go to the Entrepo Human Resource Development Center, and you will see it there. And hopefully, Mr. Speaker, hopefully, Mr. Speaker, there is also going to be a library in the area, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, education. You know about the schools, the expansion happening in the schools in the constituency. The Boka School was expanded, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, you remember, Mr. Speaker, in 1998, when I put the philosophical underpinning on the tourism industry, when I said that tourism must benefit, the benefits of tourism must accrue to as many people as possible, and tourism can't be an enclave industry, and all of us must be involved, and I said I would have a symbolic start by moving the opening of the jazz festival from an enclave hotel to the Mindifilli Park. Remember how I was criticized, Mr. Speaker? Some of the same people who want to represent the people of Kashishis, they criticized me. They said I was a madman, wanted to bring politics to jazz and politics to Marsha. Now, Mr. Speaker, the jazz festival not only opens in Marsha, it's not only a main event, but we also have jazz in Bocage. And Mr. Speaker, and the confidence of that jazz in Bocage is that it is fully sponsored. So it takes not one cent from the government. It's being used for the jazz in Bocage. And I want to thank the sponsors, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the people of Bocage for accepting jazz. So on the 4th of May, I want to invite you, Mr. Speaker, to come to jazz in Bocage. And all honorable members can come, Mr. Speaker, without exception. Because I know some honorable members have been in the constituency for making all kind of promises. No problem. Come to Bocage for jazz. Mr. Speaker, the health centers in the Marsha Center has been closed. It's been closed, Mr. Speaker, because the health center has structural problems. The sewage system is bad. The building is bad. When vehicles pass, the building shakes. So we have to close the health center. We have transferred the activities of the health center to Anchipo, and the Minister of Health has assured me that the Anchipo Health Center is going to be expanded during this fiscal year so that dental services and more services can be added to the health center. So again, the people of Masha, even though the health center is closed in Masha, the Anchipo Health Center is open. And to facilitate the elderly people come to the health center, we have built another entrance so they can get to the health center easier. We have done that to facilitate them, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I said earlier, when the next election comes and I begin to outline my achievements, Mr. Speaker, I can prove them, Mr. Speaker. I promise the people of Arundel Hill that by the time that term is over, they will have footpaths and a possible road in the area. And I want to announce to you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to announce to the people of Arundel Hill through you that the Basic Needs Trust Fund has just informed me that they have got approval from the Caribbean Investment Bank for a footpath project in Upper Arundel Hill costing $105,000. So my promise to the people of Arundel Hill will be fulfilled, Mr. Speaker. The last one is sewage for Arundel Hill, and that program is already with the Basic Needs Trust Fund. They've asked for some more costing from the Caribbean Development Bank, and next budget, and the budget after, and the budget after, I'll not only be able to announce, but I'll be able to say that the people in Arundel Hill will have sewage facilities, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there is a road in Rock Hall called the Bellier Road, Bellier Estate. It's a road in private property. And a lot of my problems in the constituency is that I have to live on a private property. Talk about private property, Mr. Speaker. Another promise, we promised the people of Bagatelle that we would have put a ring road through the constituency. We've done half of it. The other half, the problems with that is that there are problems with the land. The land is in dispute. I've spoken to the Prime Minister, and he's told me that the Ministry of Planning will have to acquire the land. We cannot allow poor people to suffer because people are fighting over land. So we're going to acquire the land needed, and as soon as that acquisition is complete, we're going to build these footpaths in Bagatelle, as we promised, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm continuing my constituency, Mr. Speaker, because I know I only have 10 minutes left. I'll finish before that, so I won't need any extra time. Mr. Speaker, I opened my constituency office long before 1997, long before. My constituency office was opened from, my honorable friend here knows that, from 1999, no, before that, long before that, from 1989, Mr. Speaker, I opened the constituency office. Yes, 1989, you know where it was. That's when you were wise. When you were among us.
Before you lost your way.
You were the feature speaker. Yeah. He was the feature speaker in my constituency conference. He was there. No, he was young and vibrant and smart. Till he did that thing. Mr. Speaker, and we enjoyed him. We enjoyed his speech. He spoke. He was eloquent. And the people were impressed, Mr. Speaker. From that time, we have continued the constituency office, and we've ensured that the location is in Castries East. Mr. Speaker, we added to that office, we put in computers. So the children in the constituency are surfing the net, etc., Mr. Speaker. Some people try to follow, but the only problem is nobody goes to the office. Mr. Speaker, we've opened office number 2. Mr. Speaker, and the point is, Mr. Speaker, these offices are not political offices, you know. The office in Boca is not a political office. It's a community office, Mr. Speaker. We've paid for the internet connection. We already have the computers. And by the time I come here again, next year, or even the next meeting if you ask me, I will tell you that the people of Bocage have an internet cafe where they can surf the net, they can do their research and improve the educational well-being of the people of Bocage. And so, Mr. Speaker, still on my constituency, Mr. Speaker, we have some problems behind the Rockall School. The problem with the Rockall School, Mr. Speaker, is that there is squatting, unplanned settlement, unplanned development in the Rockall School. So no matter how we try, there are problems there. The Minister of Education has told me that the school will be decommissioned possibly in 2006-2007 when the other schools are built. Then we'll ask Proud to take over the land so that we can have some, so you can rationalize the development in the Rockall School, behind the Rockall School, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my constituency is very dear to me. And again, regardless of how much I'm criticized, I'm proud of people there, Mr. Speaker. The people of my constituency, the majority of them are honest, hard-working, working-class people. Mr. Speaker, when they speak about my constituency, they like to speak about Marchand. No. Mr. Speaker, my constituency is Bocage, my constituency is Anchipo, my constituency is part of Waterworks Road, my constituency is the Marchand Main Road, it's Pavé, Mr. Speaker. And talking about Pavé, Mr. Speaker, I know the people of Pavé and the young people that want to know about their playing field. About the multi-purpose court, Mr. Speaker. When I came and I spoke about the multi-purpose court for the people of Pavé, I was laughed at. I want to announce to you, Mr. Speaker, that the Ministry of Planning, they've inspected the area and they found a suitable spot for a multi-purpose court in the area, and the land is going to be acquired shortly, and hopefully, Mr. Speaker, construction of the multi-purpose court will begin. I cannot say when, but I can tell you the land now has been identified, and the people, the young people of Pavé, will get their much-needed multi-purpose court. Still on Pavé, Mr. Speaker, there were problems on Pavé from the David England lands. The government acquired the land. Now the people want to buy the land. What will happen is that the Ministry of Planning will have to survey it and rationalize it again so that we can sell the land to the people of Pavé. Same as the Paul Augustine lands, we continue so the people can buy the land. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you, and I want to thank my honorable colleagues for hearing me this afternoon, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm excited about St. Lucia. I'm excited about the prospects for development for this country. I am not as negative as some people are. I believe the majority of people of St. Lucia are positive people, they are proud people, they are hardworking people, and they will help, they will put the shoulders to the wheel and cause St. Lucia to continue on the path of sustainable development that is taking place. We've gone through the hardest times. We've passed through the 9/11 problems. The post-9/11 era is beyond us. A number of things are happening that we have no control of, but I'm sure with the guidance of this Prime Minister and with the work of this government, with the help and the assistance of the private sector and other citizens of St. Lucia, St. Lucia will continue in its path of development. And I'm pleased and I'm happy to be part of this progress, and I give my support to this budget, and I'm sure that this budget will help in the development and growth for the people of St. Lucia. I thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.